Anyway, Niall, I want you to give me a brief overview of white-tailed eagles in Ireland, if you would, please.
It is a magnificent creature. It's a species that was once widespread here, but a few centuries ago we lost them through persecution. They were poisoned and killed by people for no particularly good reason, to be honest, because it's mainly a fish-eating eagle, and so any risks to livestock or anything are really overblown. It's not a problem for them, but we lost them, and it's a shame because it was one of our biggest birds, the biggest wingspan of any bird in Ireland. They look like a barn door flying through the sky, wingspan not far off 3 metres. They're absolutely enormous, and so we lost them, and there's many places names in Ireland that are named after the eagles, and people often think that's the golden eagle, but no, in most cases it is the white-tailed eagle, which is even bigger than the golden eagle. And then fast forward to more recent years, where a very ambitious reintroduction program was underway, and still is, where birds donated from Norway, young eagles taken from the nest there, flown to Ireland, reared and then released in County Kerry, have slowly but surely been repopulating the island. And it takes a long time for them to get to reproductive age, and there are often setbacks, and there have been unfortunately some poisoning and shooting incidents over the years, but they've got to a point now where actually the species is firmly established as a breeder. They're producing more and more chicks each year, and hopefully their place in Irish skies is now once again assured.
We've been following the progress of the reintroduction of white-tailed eagles to Ireland with great interest on this programme for many years. In May of this year, one of Ireland's oldest breeding white-tailed eagles, Cayman, was found dead in Clare. Initial post-mortem results indicate a possible death from poisoning, and the National Parks and Wildlife Service is appealing to the public for information. And just recently, another white-tailed eagle was found dead, and it too appears to have died as a result of poisoning. Last week, Christopher O'Sullivan, TD, Minister of State at the Department of Housing, Local Government and Heritage, was in Norway with a team of scientists from Ireland and Norway collecting white-tailed eagle chicks as part of the ongoing reintroduction programme. They successfully collected 15 chicks, but I'm told that a further 10 will be collected, and approximately 25 in total will be brought to Kerry in the next 14 days or thereabouts. We spoke to the minister from his base in Trondheim.
Yeah, so at the moment I'm in Trondheim, obviously close to the west coast of Norway, about halfway up. You can picture Norway is quite a long in length, but we're about halfway up on the west coast. So I'm here. And tomorrow we're getting ready to go out and retrieve some more white-tailed eagle chicks for the Irish reintroduction programme, something I'm incredibly excited about. It's a bit of a dream. I have to pinch myself that I get an opportunity to do this, to be honest. It's since seeing my first white-tailed eagles in Kerry well over 10 years ago now. I can't believe I'm here now in Norway taking part in this programme to bring fledged white-tailed eagle chicks back to Ireland as part of that reintroduction programme.
Well, I know that you are genuinely interested in birds, it's fair to say. Would you describe yourself as a twitcher?
Niall will get this, but I describe myself more as a birder than a twitcher. There is a difference. And some people get quite offended by being called twitcher. No, I don't, because...
Oh, goodness, goes my knighthood.
I think if we're all honest with ourselves, we're all a bit of both. Obviously, I've travelled the length and breadth of the country to see various species of bird. I remember going all the way up to Belmullet one time to see a beater, and halfway up I had to question my sanity. So I certainly have partaken in twitching, but birding for me, I think, is where I get my real excitement in spring and autumn. Going to places like Cape Clear, Mizzen Head, even Clonakilty, my own hometown around the estuaries, looking for those rare vagrants, either from the US or perhaps that have blown up from the continent. It's an unbelievable thrill, and it's hard to describe to people. Not everyone gets it. Mm. Not everyone gets that thrill. I remember Niall once found a brown booby on the east coast.
That's
of
Greystones.
Of Ireland, and like I can imagine the excitement you felt there, Niall. That's kind of a percentage of what we feel when we find these rare species of bird. And what it does is, Derek, it also, I think, it gives you a wider appreciation for ecology of all types, you know, butterflies, plant species. You really start to kind of become immersed in wildlife. So it's something that I'm glad I discovered when I did, and I think it's with me for life now.
Minister, I think that, yeah, a lot of people have come to this love of nature, and I think that sometimes, you know, when people try to categorise birders as one or another, or it gets a bit elitist, I think that, yeah, can be counterproductive, because I think some people ask me, who's the best bird watcher, you know, and I always say, it's the person who enjoys it the most, the people who get the most out of it. People can get overly obsessed with trying to identify everything, and sometimes that can even ruin the passion for them. So I think that, you know, that brown booby that you mentioned, for example, so many people just walking along, saw the crowds were looking at it, brought joy to loads of people. And that's actually really one of my favourite things about the whole experience.
I would 100% agree with you. And I'm very envious of people who can go out in nature and just let bird sounds just wash over him and just embrace that overall experience rather than, you know, sometimes we do get caught up in, with identifying those rare species and finding those rare species. And it can be quite elitist. And I think sometimes young birders in particular, they can find it quite difficult to get into the scene because as you're new to birding, and I remember having those really embarrassing moments where I misidentified birds at the start, sometimes you do get that feeling of being judged. But having said that, there are wonderful people out there in the birding world and in the twitching world who are very encouraging of people to get into this pastime. So I think your point, Niall, is that there is certainly a place for everyone. Some people are generalists. Some people love going down to places like Galleyhead during July and August and looking for rare seabirds. Some people love looking for rare gulls in winter, and gulls get a pretty bad rap from time to time, but I think they're a wonderful species, and some people just love that aspect of it. But yeah, I do sometimes envy those people who just go out and they're not too bothered about what bird is seen or what bird has come across their path. They're just enjoying the whole experience. So I fully agree with you there.
The Dunbar number, Minister, it says that we can know 150 people only well in our lifetime. We can't know more than that. Our brains aren't equipped to know more than that. Now, birds are the perfect entry into natural history because in Ireland we have roughly 151 or thereabouts birds that we can get to know readily. So it's a great place to begin, it seems to me. Don't begin with the insects. There's tens of thousands of them there and you'll be lost in no time. And the fish are difficult to get at and so forth. But I think the birds are the way in. They do a great service to natural history in general.
Where'd you get that number 150? I heard there's over 460 something odd birds on the Irish bird list, and we're going to be hearing from Rafe Shepherd later, who's written a book about the birds of County Donegal, and I think he's got 376 odd species. So where's the 150 coming from?
Well, now there are about 400 plus on the Irish list, but a few of them are actually extinct worldwide. The number of practical birds you can see in Ireland is about 150. The others are rare vagrants, accidentals that only come here very occasionally and so forth. 150 is roughly the target that you will manage in your lifetime, I think anyway. And Robert Dunbar, the Oxford man, he claimed that all sorts of disciplines are limited to 150 people, do you know?
I can relate to that. I can relate to that, Richard. I mean, so I find trying to learn about birds and identifying birds, that takes up enough, I suppose, space within my brain. And I know a lot of people then venture into things like mothing and identifying butterfly species, and I can't go there. There's no way I can go there, first of all, trying to get the time, but also the brain power to be able to identify moths and butterflies as well. So I totally agree with what you're saying. It's a lovely entry. We're limited in terms of in reality the number of bird species that we can get here, but certainly my kind of, I suppose, message to anyone who's thinking about getting into birds and do what I did at the start is identify those birds that are coming to your bird feeders. You know, get your bird app, get your bird book, you know, the field guides. I mean, one of the reasons I got into birding was a friend of your show, Eric Dempsey, and his Finding Birds in Ireland, which brought me to all wonderful places right across Ireland. And there's so many incredible field guides can really give you a flavour of what's out there.
Eric is also into mothing, as it happens. Richard?
Yes, and another thing about birds is that they're very like us. They're not closely related to us, but we identify with them better. They are daylight behaviour, and they are present day and night everywhere there are birds, and they do the sort of things we do, so we can identify them. They pair off, they raise young, whereas things like reptiles are a little bit remote, and spiders and things that creep around and stop and stare at you are less appealing, but the birds are very appealing, and they sing.
Don Conroy always used to say, if you want to see wildlife, look up. There's always a bird in the sky.
Minister, obviously your main focus while you're in Norway is the white-tailed eagles, and we'll be talking about those shortly, but are there any potential lifers there you might be hoping for?
Oh, got to be careful now, because this is very much a work trip, Niall, of course. You know, I couldn't be taking off down side tracks and looking for species, but absolutely, yes, there are. There's some of the woodpecker species here that would be first for me. Some species like grey-headed woodpecker, for example, and perhaps three-toed woodpecker as well would be first for me. A lot of the owl species as well that they have up here, I haven't had the opportunity to see yet. Things like hawk owl, now that would be an absolute dream bird. I don't know how likely that is, but it does hunt during the day, so perhaps that's something that we could come across. And eagle owl is something that I haven't managed to yet see in anywhere in the world. So yeah, there's a few absolute lifers there, but of course, work comes first, Niall, as you know, and this is very much about the White-tailed Eagle Project and really thanking the Norwegians who have been so generous in their time and efforts in order to gift us back this incredible species.
Yeah, we're on a busman's holiday. Well, you've certainly established your credentials. You're in the right department, let's say, your ministry, but will it be very bird-centric with you there?
Listen, that's a really good question, actually, because I think coming into this department, and the official, I suppose, title is Minister of State with Responsibility for Nature, Heritage and Biodiversity. And of course, coming into it, the nature and the wildlife side was always going to be at the top of the agenda just because of my interest and where I came from. But interestingly, the heritage side of things and the built heritage and those incredible old buildings that we have right across Ireland have actually really come to the fore in terms of the incredible work going on there. But when it comes back to wildlife, there are some incredible projects out there. There's no doubt about that. The White-tailed Eagle Project, the Corncrake Life Project, for example, where we've seen a bounce back in corncrakes, the Waders EIP, where we've seen incredible work around wading birds. But there's some incredible work going on with things like the Natterjack Toad. I was lucky enough to go down to Photo Island, where they're captive breeding these Natterjack Toads and releasing them back into the wild in Kerry. I suppose the bottom line here, Derek, is habitats in general. And protecting those habitats, whether it's farmland habitats, wetlands, dune systems, woodlands. That's the kind of bigger picture, because we won't, without these habitats, we won't have any of these wonderful species. So certainly, yes, it was. I would say I was very bird-centric coming into this role, but since coming into in February and learning about the wonderful work that the NPWS do, there's not more to this job than just protecting bird species.
Recently we heard of some poisonings in relation to white-tailed eagles too. So what can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it's devastating, and I think this is part of the reason I'm here as well in Norway, because obviously they're concerned when they hear of these poisonings and any losses of our birds that we're introducing in Ireland. So it's partly to say that, look, in general, the trends in terms of this progress have been really good. We have 18 pairs on territory this year, which is a new high. We have 15 pairs that are breeding successfully, which is another new high. So in general, this scheme is really working. But we have had far too many losses. Too many losses put down to things like turbine strikes, but also poisoning. Poisoning is by far the biggest factor when it comes to loss of these incredible and majestic birds. Some perhaps intentional, many secondary when a poison is laid out with other targets in mind. But that really doesn't matter. The bottom line is that we're losing these birds. And if we're to ensure that they survive, we have to ensure that we're vigilant in terms of stopping the use of, especially of illegal poisons like carbapurin. So what we've seen recently, Derek, in the last number of months, we've had just very recently in Kerry, a newly released female was found, that the carcass was found with carbapurin in it. And I suppose more worryingly from your point of view, Cayman, who's a bird that first established breeding site back in Loch Derg over 17 years ago, and actually would be known to your show, Derek, because I remember listening to your show many years ago when Dr. Mee was on, and he was talking about Alan Mee, exactly. Dr. Alan Mee was on. He was talking about the first successfully fledged wild white-tailed eagles in Ireland, the first ever. And of course, the father or the male bird in that incident was Cayman. And unfortunately, Cayman is the bird that we lost in Clare just a number of months ago. And again, that has been confirmed that that's down to carbapurin. So it's really sad. It's devastating. The NPWS staff who put so much work into these projects, they become attached to the birds. Maybe they shouldn't. Maybe they should keep that distance. But, you know, they learn about these birds. They follow them through the tracking mechanisms and the trackers that they attach to these birds. They learn their behavior. They learn their whereabouts. So they do become attached to these birds. And to lose these birds then is absolutely devastating. But it also has consequences for the overall success of the project, because Cayman was a prolific breeder. He was really good at what he did, put it that way. And it's so sad to lose him. So we will crack down, and it's certainly a priority of mine as minister to ensure that we ensure there's more prosecutions and that we cut out this reckless behaviour.
What do you say to people if you think they are doing it deliberately?
Just absolutely think of the consequences. I mean, if they're doing it deliberately, there will be no effort spared in terms of bringing those people to justice. There is absolutely no excuse for deliberate poisoning or targeting of these birds. They pose no threat to people. They pose no threat to farm life. And I think that is, to be fair, right across Ireland, and the farming community in particular, have really bought into this scheme. They know that these birds don't pose a threat to farm life. So they're buying into it. Obviously, there are some very few individuals out there who don't buy into that, and we have to target that. And look, just from the other benefits, economically, we've seen in places like Lough Derg and Garnish, you know, very close to where I'm from in West Cork and Garnish Island, that breeding pair has brought people to West Cork, and people are spending money to come and see these incredible birds. So, you know, just think of the consequences. But to those who are doing it purposely, you know, we have set up a wildlife crime division now within the department. So we are putting more resources into ensuring that we bring people to justice. And we also are working with the Gardaí. So I certainly will spare no effort in terms of bringing these people to justice.
I remember many times going to Aviemore in Scotland to see the ospreys nesting there. And the amount of people, the amount of money it brought in at the right time of year as well. You know, it was off in the sense it wasn't winter. A lot of people go there for the skiing. Believe it or not, people don't think of Scotland as a place to go skiing, but it is a good place. But at any rate, to go and see the ospreys nesting there. So ecotourism can really develop if we allow it, can't it?
It can, in a sensitive way. I mean, some of the sites have to be kept secret because they may be in precarious positions. In the case of Garnish, which I mentioned, it's a really lovely experience because if you're a punter going out to Garnish Island, which is a short boat trip, you get to see your harbour seals, which is, you know, a rare enough mammal down there. But you actually pass very close by where the eagles nest, and quite often you'll have one of the adults on the nest are close by. Just to see people's reaction when they see the sheer size of these birds is just breathtaking. It's worth the money itself. So you will see a big uptake in terms of wildlife tourism, and that's been the experience, I think, in Scotland as well. Done sensitively, make sure that we're directing people in the right direction and not causing disturbance, because that has been an issue with nests as well. But there is potential there. And with that, then you get greater buy-in from the community. So that's why I think it is an important aspect of it.
We've seen this very species, the white-tailed eagle, on the Isle of Mull in Scotland. It's basically regenerated entire tourism industry there. And if you think about that, I mean, it's wonderful for that region of Scotland, but it's quite hard for people to get to, and it's off the beaten track. Whereas if we have these viewable from mainland locations within Ireland, already in well-touristed areas, this could actually be revolutionary for our country. And the thing about the white-tailed eagle is that even if people aren't bird watchers or think that they aren't interested in that, you couldn't fail to be interested or captivated by a white-tailed eagle because they are such spectacular birds. Minister, I know that you know them very well. Perhaps you could describe them for us.
I don't know them as well as you know. I can say that with a fair degree of certainty. But I understand one of the nicknames that they have is the Barn Door of the Sky. That's just because of the sheer wingspan that they have, well over 2 metres. They're the biggest eagle that we have in Europe, I understand. So their size is enormous. They have this beautiful down-curved yellow bill, which is really striking. Obviously, there's the white tail, which they acquire, which is quite obvious from a distance as well. So compared to other eagles, they're you know, fairly easy to get your eye in and identify because of those features. Another interesting aspect, and I've learned this from my visit to Scotland, and something I was only very aware of. You might know now that in bird guides, they're treated a bit differently to the other eagle species, and that's because the theory is that they're quite closely related to the kites and the red kite species, because yes, they do hunt wild prey, and in fact when they're feeding their young, they will feed them exclusively live prey and wild prey, but they are fans of scavenging and carrion as well. So, you know, compared to, we'll say, a bald eagle, which is a pure hunter and, you know, is just a killing machine for want of a better term, the white-tailed eagles are almost like the gentle giant. But that's it, they're absolutely majestic, they're huge in terms of height, in terms of wingspan. And if you see one, I remember seeing that first one in Ladies View in Kerry, the first thing I saw was this dark shadow just coming over, and that's the first thing I noticed. And then this beautiful adult white-tailed eagle came over, and they're stunning and well worth seeing. And I absolutely agree with you. With the advances in optics now and scopes and binoculars, you can get quite good view of these birds from a safe distance and ensure that there's no disturbance.
So back to why you're in Norway, which is to collect some white-tailed eagle chicks. Tell us how it's going to happen and what you will be doing.
Yeah, so I don't know for sure, because this is the first time doing it. We're going tomorrow. I can't give away exact
the location. No, we understand that.
For obvious reasons, yeah, and you totally understand that. And the other thing to say is that people might imagine me getting into harness and climbing up trees, but actually that may not be the case, in that some of the breeding sites are actually more accessible than you might think, which is a really interesting study point as well in terms of the birds that come over to Ireland. So we will be going out tomorrow with the team at NINA, the Norwegian Institute for Nature Research. They're absolutely fantastic, and it really, the invite came in the last couple of months, and I couldn't say no because for many reasons. It's something, of course, that I want to do, but I think we owe a great debt of gratitude, not just to the MPWS on our side, but to Nina and for the amazing effort they have put in to bring over 200 birds now to Ireland. So that's something incredible. So we'll be going out on site. I'll be helping to retrieve some of the chicks. We only take chicks from a nest where there's two or more chicks in the nest, obviously so it's sustainable to sustain the population here, which is very, very strong here in Norway. We will be ringing the birds that we, the chicks that we do take. They will then be taken off into incubation just for a small period. They'll be put on a plane to Kerry Airport, and then the rest will be up to the MPWS team, and they'll be fed in a feeding pen for 6 to 10 weeks, depending on how the birds develop, when they develop their flight feathers, etc., and then they'll be released. So this is, I suppose, sadly, in some ways, it's the last retrieval that will happen. Hopefully it's the last, because that will be a sign that this project has been a success and that the pairs that have established here are enough to sustain a widespread breeding population across Ireland, once again, going back to the 19th century when they would have been widespread.
And just remind people why you're actually taking the chicks from Norway and not some other country.
One of the main reasons is that there's such a widespread bird here. There's a really healthy population. Some would say that they've almost reached, I suppose, a point where they can't really expand into any more territory anymore, because every bit of territory now has a white-tailed eagle pair, and that the natural, I suppose, next thing to happen with these species anyway is that they would start expanding their range into places like Scotland and then perhaps into Ireland, and we're just accelerating that process. So that would be the main reason. We have a really close working relationship with Duncan Halley and his team in Nina, and thus the cooperation has been fabulous. So we had to pick a sustainable population. That's why we're also, and you would have covered this in your show as well, Derek, taking osprey chicks from Norway as well, and there'll be 50 birds released in Ireland over the next few years. The first release happened a couple of years ago. They're now down somewhere in Africa. They have to wait until they reach breeding maturity until they come back, and fingers crossed they will come back to Ireland and stay loyal to those sites going into the future.
Well, I was actually there when they took some of the birds. They brought 10 birds 2 years ago, and we were there filming for Back from the Brink for RT Television and the EBU, and one of the concerns was, would these birds come back to Ireland or Norway, because they are migrant birds, and as you said, they're in Africa. They go to Africa for the first couple of years, and then when they're big and bold enough, they come back to breed when they get back. Now, I don't know if those birds have returned yet or not. I don't think they have, but the white-tailed eagle, they're partial migrants now, aren't they?
Well, they kind of wander. So we're hopeful, and usually the case, that these birds do stay within Ireland, but we're talking an absolutely massive bird. And as the Minister was saying there, in Norway, there's a lot of, almost a saturation point with the territories. In Ireland, that's not the case. There's still a lot of unclaimed territory out there for these white-tailed eagles. So they will wander and roam, and then they eventually will settle down and they have their sort of breeding.
Not wander in Rome.
Well, not that far, maybe.
Wander
and roam around. But we've seen some of the birds released in Kerry turn up, you know, for example, on the Wicklow coast, and then go back a few weeks later.
They're not leaving the country now. Yeah.
I can see a really good news story from the white-tailed eagle point of view. You know, looking at the trajectory since 2010, it's been quite a steep increase in terms of the amount of, first of all, the amount of attempted breeding pairs, the amount of pairs that are holding territory, and then the amount of successful breeding pairs. And we believe that figure of about 15 successful breeding pairs and 18 on territory is the point where we feel that, you know, this now can go on and expand naturally. And there's so much, I suppose, what's different between the golden eagle reintroduction, where perhaps the habitat and feed has become a challenge in terms of identifying prey species. There's so much suitable habitat right along the coast of Ireland, from the north right down to the southwest, and perhaps even further, and even inland. There's so much suitable habitat that we can really hopefully see an increase in the range and numbers of these birds. But we really do have to clamp down on those needless loss of birds through things like poisoning and illegal shooting.
Well, Minister Christopher O'Sullivan, thank you very much indeed, and good luck with your expedition.
Thank you. Looking forward to it.